Hello and welcome to the Autosport Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Kalanorkas. Formula One is back in action this weekend with the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix finally getting underway 8 months after its initial date on the calendar passed by during the opening phase of the COVID pandemic. The pre-event media day took place today at the Sakhir track, with the biggest talking points coming out of the paddock, the topics for our latest bite-sized podcast. So, joining me on the podcast tonight to discuss those topics and more is Autosport F1 reporter Luke Smith. How are you, Luke?
Doing good, thank you, Alex. Yeah, a bit strange not to be on site after doing the last few races. And it's sort of quite interesting getting used to the night race timings as well when you're back in the UK and everything's just that little bit later. So it does throw you off a little bit. But all going good. I believe it's your first night race, isn't it, as well?
It is, yeah. It's strange not having you on the road with me. It's a little bit of a different way of working. I'm sort of partnered with our photography colleagues at LAT at Motorsport Images for this one. But as I was saying, I haven't really adjusted yet to the sort of night race schedule, because obviously we're getting set up today in the media center and everything sort of, it works as normal, but everything's just that little bit later. But it's going to be interesting when it starts to get dark and there's still cars going around, and the knock-on effects that has, obviously. But might have experienced that a little bit in Melbourne, because everything takes so late at the beginning of the year, but then we never got around to it because it got cancelled, which is a big shame. But all good so far, I would say. Let's move on to our first topic for tonight. Just very quickly, how the latest bad news ultimately, which is down at Red Bull, in that team manager Jonathan Wheatley tested positive for coronavirus. What were the team saying about that today, and what do we know about how Jonathan is?
So the good news is that Jonathan is feeling fine. He's not shown too strong of symptoms. So the news was put out by Red Bull this morning that he had tested positive and was self-isolating and would be missing the race. I got in touch with Red Bull to ask about that. Apparently it was last week that he had the test and that it came back positive. He's since tested negative for COVID, so that is a good sign. Obviously he's still adhering to the isolation guidelines as are required, but there's a chance he might be back even for the next weekend's race in Bahrain, if not probably back for the season finale in Abu Dhabi. So good news is that he's doing well. Obviously the latest sort of senior F1 figure to test positive after Simon Roberts at Williams and Pirelli's Mario Isola in recent weeks, but the good news is that he's feeling okay and will hopefully be back in the paddock very soon.
Absolutely, and we wish him well and hope he recovers okay. Luke, let's go on to it's sort of a regular update we do on this Thursday podcast about Sergio Perez and his 2021 plans. What was he saying today during the Racing Point media session, and what's the latest on the possibility of him going to Red Bull next year?
So yeah, that's really now his only option. I think he's admitted that as well now. He said today that he's really only got one out left, and that is Red Bull. The team obviously is known to be considering Alexander Albon's future. It's made very clear that if it were to drop Albon, then it would look to a driver outside its own driver pool to replace him. So that does point to either Sergio Perez or Nico Hülkenberg potentially. Hülkenberg recently said that it had gone very, very quiet in terms of talks with Red Bull or anything on that front. So that does really point to Perez being sort of the only candidate really who could replace Albon for next year. But Checo was probably the strongest he's been today about it. He said that really Red Bull is his only opportunity, and that if he weren't to get that seat for next season, then he would likely take a sabbatical and just take a year out of racing. Didn't sort of say about any other series or anything like that. He said that he's maybe sort of enjoy some of the other things in life and be able to spend more time with his kids, with his family, look at some business ventures and things such as that. So I think probably the most content he's been about his future, really, because it's been a lot of uncertainty, I think, in terms of could it be Williams, could it be Red Bull, but now he's kind of made it clear that really it's Red Bull or a sabbatical. That's what's going to happen for next year, and I guess the ball is now firmly in Red Bull's court to decide what they want to do with Albon and whether Perez could be a replacement for him. But if not, then it's likely that Checo, who's been a really strong performer right the way through this season, obviously that brilliant podium in Turkey, but will be spending a year on the sidelines completely.
And what's the latest coming out of Red Bull? Was sort of Albon suggesting that he's got, he's got until the end of the year to prove he's got what it takes to keep hold of his seat?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. So obviously the two big things Red Bull are trying to work out at the moment are their driver lineup for next year and also their engine supply deal beyond 2021, after which point Honda will go. And the kind of the impression is that really they're more worried about the Honda situation and what they're going to do with their engines than they are on the driver front. They said a couple of weeks back that they wanted a decision on what would be happening with a potential engine freeze that they want so they could continue to use those Honda power units after 2021. They said they wanted that decision by the end of the month. But on the driver front, Christian Horner has said that they've got time, basically, because the rest of the market is so confirmed and sewn up, basically. It gives Red Bull the chance that they've got no rush. Like, there's no chance that Perez is going to be snapped up by anybody else. So really, they don't need to rush into a decision and then give Albon sort of the fullness of time to see what he's going to do in these final three races and try and stake a claim for that seat. And obviously, Haas is the other sort of like team that hasn't really committed to its drivers for next year. Günther Steiner, at the beginning of the press session today, he went, "I want to start and I want to say something." And he said, "We'll be making an announcement soon." But he said, "I don't want any more questions about it because there's nothing more I can say." So, I think Haas, we kind of know what way that's going. Obviously, Nikita Mazepin and Mick Schumacher, they are widely expected to get those seats. So you'd anticipate that is who the announcement will be about. But that means that ultimately Red Bull has got all the time in the world, basically, to give Albon these final three races, give him a real shot at trying to stake a claim for that seat and prove why it should be him and not Sergio Perez who races for that team next year.
Indeed, and I would suggest quite heavily that it's quite likely we'll know what's happening at Haas, say, this time next week or by this time next week when we're doing this podcast next week for the second Bahrain race. We will say no more than that, rather cryptically. But it's just interesting, just sticking at Haas, there is speculation about the futures of one of their current drivers, Kevin Magnussen, our colleague David Malsha Lopez over at motorsport.com, reporting that he's quite likely to switch to the IMSA Sports Car Championship in the USA to drive for Chip Ganassi's squad in that championship. He was remaining quite coy, Magnussen, on whether his future was confirmed. He was saying, I haven't committed to anything. But that's what Autosport and motorsport.com understands is going to happen with him. Also, Romain Grosjean as well, saying, I haven't got anything to announce at the moment in terms of my future, but hopefully I will be able to announce something soon, probably Peugeot hypercars in the WEC, most likely for him, because there are no seats left in Formula E. And I still think it was fairly unlikely that the days of Formula One drivers just being like, "Oh, I'm out of Formula One, I'll rock up in Formula E," do seem to be over. But let's stay with Romain Grosjean, because it was really interesting. I was in that press session, and you were obviously speaking to Günther Steiner earlier, Luke, and in that session he'd sort of said Grosjean has been quite difficult to manage on occasion, despite the fact that he has been a good asset to the Haas squad. And Grosjean was sort of hit back, rather. It shows that the gloves are kind of off now that the relationship's officially coming to an end. Basically, I believe you may be able to correct me if I'm wrong, Luke, but I think the term is throwing some shade back at Haas with his response.
Oh, yes. Look at you, Alex.
Thank you. I'm a young person.
You are. Well done. That's exactly it. Roman sort of suggested that he maybe is tough to manage, but he said, but who isn't? Like, all drivers have their moments, of course, but he's ultimately brought a lot to the team. And he did throw a bit of shade, saying, well, other people have managed me okay. They've managed all right. So it was, maybe a little bit of a dig at Günther Steiner and the Haas team. And I do really like it when you have drivers sort of coming to the end of a relationship with a team and they just don't care anymore. Like, obviously, they're not saying anything to try and like save their future or try and like commit to get to another team for next season or anything like that. So they can kind of say what they want. And I think it was similar in 2016, I believe, when Kevin Magnussen, who's always quite a forthright kind of guy, and he was on his way out of Renault and had already sort of like had a deal with Haas about to be announced, and Renault were kind of going around with this seat trying to sort of like say, well, who could we sign? Obviously, they wanted Magnussen, I think they want for Romain Grosjean as well, and Kevin Magnussen said, yeah, I think they were going around to everyone, including the Pope, and trying to give them this seat. And remember, Cyril Abitbol was really, really unimpressed by it, but Magnussen was kind of like, look, I'm on my way out, so what does it matter? And I think it's similar with Roman. Like, he can kind of be a little bit cheeky and a little bit have this kind of snark thrown around, which is it makes our jobs great, like, because we love talking to drivers when they can be like that and get rid of all the PR surround and everything and just be very honest and say, look, this is how it is. And hopefully we can bring a bit more of that out of Roman. And I've got an interview with him in Abu Dhabi, so by then I'm sure he'll be in full sort of like no cares given, to put it politely.
Yes. Well, I was thinking you were going to say something completely much more ruder there, Luke. But well saved. Yes, I think the gloves will certainly be off by that stage. Luke, let's move on to Ferrari. Charles Leclerc, what was he? How was his response to the sort of the very, very end of the race in Turkey, which was a brilliant drive from him? Just took the gloss off it by making a mistake. It was weird actually because it looked on TV at first glance like he was attacking Perez. He was actually defending against him because he'd got by at the previous corner, but the Ferrari is so slow on the straights. Perez had come straight back by him, even though Leclerc had DRS. And he was absolutely furious with himself. An amazing sort of team radio rant about himself to himself, really. His engineer going, and radio off at one point to Leclerc, which I thought was quite amusing. But yeah, what was his response today about that incident?
Yeah, he held his hands up about it, and he said that, as you say, he was very, very hard on himself, and I think that's been a hallmark, really, of Charles Leclerc's whole F1 career. Like, he's always very, very tough on himself, very vocal in his self-criticism, and that's kind of just how he's always dealt with things. But, yeah, he spoke about it today, and he said, really, it comes down to two factors. He said there's not really a lot of point talking to Vettel about it, or dwelling on sort of the experience that Perez and Vettel have that was suggested when he was asked about it, whether that might have been a deciding factor. And he said, really, it came down to, A, that I was too optimistic under braking, that just missed the braking point by a little bit. But obviously, it was so, so slippery, and the track conditions were so tough that even just missing it by a very minor fraction, that resulted in, obviously, him running wide and losing both positions. And he said the other thing was that his car was very dirty, that his mirrors were so sort of like filled with muck that he couldn't really see what was going on around him. So he didn't really know where Perez and Vettel were. He wasn't really sure 100% where to position his car. And obviously, when you're trying to defend from what is ultimately a faster car trying to pass you on the straight, very, very difficult. So he said it was sort of those two things really in tandem. But yeah, he said that he's going to learn from it. And that's what I think Leclerc has always done throughout his career. I think when he came into F1 and I think about his period with Ferrari last year, and it was qualifying that always let him down. He'd be brilliant in Q1 and Q2, but the amount of lap time he would gain between Q1 and Q3 was minor. Like, he would be sort of like 100% right from the beginning, and there'd be no build-up. And he kind of learned, like, okay, that's not the way to do things. I've got to go in slow and just sort of build things up, basically. And then obviously went on that brilliant sort of streak of qualifying victories over Sebastian Vettel, ended the year with, I believe, 7 pole positions, and was in fantastic form. So it's that kind of sort of adaptability, and that way he learns from his mistakes, that I think is a real strength of Leclerc's. And I think, yeah, it'll be a similar thing here, that it'll have annoyed him no end to have lost that podium, as we heard over the radio. He's probably still a little bit bitter about it, but he'll learn from it, he'll come back stronger, and yeah, I think he'll only be better for it in the end.
Absolutely. It's interesting you mentioned the grime that was on all the cars at the end of that race in Turkey. It really showed up, sort of the way the aero is working around the car. And actually, the Mercedes with the sort of black arrows colour scheme for this year, the way it was sort of showing up made them almost appear back to silver again, if you look at certain photographs, which I thought was quite interesting. But yeah, let's move on to Mercedes now. Obviously, the title is done and dusted, but both Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas are back here and expecting to duke it out again for victory. Should be back to sort of normal for Mercedes after it had a sort of, even though Hamilton won in Turkey, it was definitely an off weekend for the team as a whole, because of the way it didn't really sort of get to grips quite literally, in fact, with the surface that they rocked up and found that had been relayed ahead of the race at Istanbul. It was interesting listening to them both in their press conference. You know, someone asked Hamilton, like, you know, why do you care so much about winning the last three races? And his response was just like, well, it's in my DNA. It's just what I'm here. I'm at an F1 race. I want to win it. And Bottas, much the same. Do you think, Luke, that perhaps Bottas is already thinking about 2021 and now's the chance to lay an early marker like Nico Rosberg did? Or is that not quite how Bottas approaches such things?
I think he has to, really. Like, I think you have to look at these first three races as a chance to build some momentum to go into the winter. And I think that, as you say, sort of, that's something that did serve Nico Rosberg so well at the back end of 2015, and that he went into 2016 on the front foot and won the opening four races of that season. So it was, what, 7 in a row in total. And like, that really was sort of a big sort of bit of momentum to build up. But I think that was combined also with Lewis Hamilton let's say, enjoying his title victory a little bit more than perhaps he should have. And it's something that I think Lewis will have learned from as well. And him saying he's wired, I believe, was the exact word he used to win these final three races. And I think that just shows where Lewis is at. Like, he wants to just continue this streak of wins and try and end the season in fashion. And he's done that the last couple of years when he traditionally sort of had this, like, after the title was won, this dip in form. That's been absent the last couple of years. So I think that, I do think he's really going to be strong. But I think for Bottas, he's got to just try and build some momentum. I think he spoke at the start of the season. I'm sure it's something that we'd be dug up many, many a time to say, oh, look, he's failed again. But he spoke about sort of like trying things a little bit different and about sort of having a secret plan to try and beat Lewis Hamilton. And now really is the time to start thinking, okay, well, in 2021, what do I want to do? How on earth am I going to beat statistically the greatest driver of all time in the same car? It's the toughest job in F1, but he's sort of got three freebie races now to maybe try some new things, maybe try a little bit of a different approach in places and just see how it goes. And because there's nothing to lose. I think that really second in the championship, I mean, that'll be expected of him, but I don't think if he were to lose it by sort of trying out some new things, I don't think that would be the end of the world for Valtteri. So, I think it's a good opportunity for him to really just try and lay a marker for next year and get some good momentum to take into the winter. And then, come back in 2021 sort of feeling refreshed and ending the season on a high to finally take the fight to Lewis.
Absolutely. It was interesting hearing Bottas say in the Mercedes press conference that, you know, he feels he has improved in a lot of areas, didn't really expand on what they were. So I might make it my mission in the rest of the press conferences he's in, assuming he makes it into them in qualifying and the race. And obviously the sessions that Mercedes will lay on Sunday, might make it my mission to get him to explain what they were for the rest of the weekend. But look, we should probably leave it there, as this is our latest bite-sized podcast episode. So thank you very much for your time and coming on the podcast tonight. And thanks to everybody listening along. Now, just before we go, we'd like to remind you that the latest issue of Autosport magazine came out today and is available on the supermarket shelves and in newsagents, as well as on the doormats of subscribers. There will be a new issue of the magazine for you to pick up every Thursday, packed full of news, analysis and the usual stunning photography. And of course, if you want unlimited access to Autosport from the comfort of your home, visit autosport.com/plus to find out how to subscribe to our digital package. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Autosport podcast.